So, due to technical difficulties with the computer that will soon be replaced, we will have a cold opening this evening instead of a pre-recorded introduction. Hi. Howdy, even. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, as other people are doing even now. Good evening, Texas T and Gerald and Carol Baker and Third Stage Guild Navigator Sparky, who has folded space in his Sparky and Band Cave at one and the same time. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. And so, absolutely, just because there's no intro does not mean you cannot come out screaming, right? I just figured it would be a little better if I didn't. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. This is the fifth day of February, 2015. And I have a feeling that, well, it's going to be like a walk through a blackberry thicket, from the looks of things. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, indeed, welcome one and all to Thorn in the Side Thursday. Hey, there's Michael popping into the chat room. Good evening, Michael. And I'm sure lots more folks will wander by in short order. We don't stand on ceremony here. It's not like I enter the room and everybody has to salute or anything. We're much more informal here and decidedly less authoritarian than that. So the chat room is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. So, too, is access to the archives, access to the live player. Yes, indeed, all kinds of opportunities exist for your fun and pleasure at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. This community is, of course, free. No one has ever been charged anything for access to the group or the program or the podcast or the 24/7 rerun stream. Nope, not a sausage. So you will therefore find at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I say it and say it and say it and say it. You know, repetition is the soul. Never mind. You'll find the contribute tab. That's where the PayPal interface is, which is how we keep the program on the air. Ah, thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting tune in is loud and clear. Jeremy able to reach into the chat room again on a mobile basis because the mobile version of the chat room is back up and running. Yay. So thank you, Jeremy. Let's see. No, we do this all by listener contribution. We do messages. We don't do necessarily advertising, but that's to say, that's because there's no one out there, you know, pursuing advertising. As it is, we hang on. As it is, we have survived for 10 years now. And I will note that Jason's, Jay Cruzen's, what shall we call it? Yes, the Jay Cruzen's Power Mad Challenge is on the table for this evening. Because we are in a $260 hole. That's $150 for this evening and $110 for what we didn't raise last night. $260, the fundraising goal for this evening. And Jay Cruzen has put forward his Power Mad Challenge. He will, if there is $100 that comes in to match it, he will double your money. In other words, you contribute $5, Jay Cruzen turns it into $10. You contribute 10, he turns it into 20, 20, 40, 40, 80, 50, 100, 100, 100, up to the first $100 that come through the door. Okie dokie. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Good. That means that everything, well, you know, everything except the tired old production computer is working. And I noticed, just because I know there's a lot of techno folks out there, I noticed that the culprit is apparently Internet Explorer. If I could get Chrome to work the way I need it to work, maybe things would be different. But no, Internet Explorer sucks. Thanks. I was about to say thanks, Bill Gates, but wait a minute, let me check it. Yeah, Gerald's in the chat room, so thanks, Obama. Internet Explorer buggy? Thanks, Obama. Didn't get your eggs done at breakfast the right way? Thanks, Obama. You get the idea. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that part yet? All right. And there's Todd. Yes, and there's Texas Tea and Jug of Punch in the room, Gerald, Doctor Who. Good evening, y'all, and hopefully many more will wander by. We've been having really good crowds and really good conversations in the chat room every evening. So where do we go? Well, again, remember, there's a challenge on the table. Your 5 becomes 10, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if Jay Cruzen's Power Mad Challenge is met, we will have only $60 more to raise to come even with the process. No. Sorry, Jeremy, Firefox is not an issue, or not an option. Soon, none of this will really matter, but for the next couple of weeks, we're going to have to deal with it. But I did finally, I don't know why it took me so long, but I looked over and went, what's eating up all the damn resources? Internet Explorer, of course. So I wanted to start something this evening, just because it would be fun. And really not so much fun, but just another day in Merca. We spent a considerable amount of time, have spent a considerable amount of time, talking about the measles outbreak and the backward, retrograde, downward spiral, swirling the bowl, kind of spinning around the drain effect that it sort of tells us that America is in. Now, I know the weirdos would say that that's because we're not praying in the schools, or because we haven't hung up enough copies of the Ten Commandments, or haven't, I don't know, carved Moses or Mitt Romney onto Mount Rushmore, or because the gay, or because the liberal, or I know, you know how they are. They blame everything on things that aren't real. But really, it's a retrograde motion that is brought on by a decidedly anti-intellectual hissy that has been thrown in this country for just near a generation now. For a little bitty while there, say with the dawning of the space age, we thought, well, America seemed to be a place that cherished technology. And looked hopefully and excitedly toward the future. No longer. 5 babies, it turns out, at a daycare center in the suburban Greater Chicagoland area. That's what they say, Chicagoland. Yeah, dog ate my homework. That's another good one, Devin. Thank you. Confirmed to have come down with the measles. Remember, this measles outbreak began when some privileged, self-centered jackass took the measles to Disneyland, and it is now spreading all over the country because it is a most opportunistic virus. So 5 babies at a daycare center in the Greater Chicagoland area have measles. That was confirmed today. The place is called Kinder Care Learning Center. It's in Palatine, Illinois. It has been confirmed by both the Illinois and Cook County Health Departments. All 5 of the children, and here's where it begins to get more and more interesting, all 5 of the children are under the age of a year. That means none of the children would have been eligible to have had the measles vaccine. Are we still on the same page? I suspect we are. So the question is, how do we protect babies from the measles? And the answer is pretty easy. We do massive mandatory immunization. And that worked for a very long time. Remember, about 15 years ago, we had eradicated. And this is the part that blows my mind. About 15 years ago, we had eradicated the measles from this country. Because this country took things like infectious childhood diseases seriously. But then comes the rise of libertarianism in America. It used to be that libertarians, you know, you might have two or three in any given sort of American anywhere city, USA. Maybe 10, maybe 15, but not really enough to do any damage. I submit that part of this, part of the rise of libertarianism and bircherism and therefore teabaggerism has to do with the rise of the internet, where once upon a time your birchers and your baggers and your birthers and your deathers and your ninthers and your tenthers and your booger eaters and your Klansmen and your white concerned citizens councils and Aryan nations and whatever and American Nazi Party, they all they could do was stand there huffing ditto fumes and running off copies that they would plaster on phone poles and over at the Rippy Mart and what have you. Big meeting Tuesday! Snacks! The internet opened up the wide, wide world to their paranoid, selfish ravings. So that a disease we thought was eradicated in the United States is now back. And may be back with a vengeance. Yeah. Because freedom. Remember Senator Rand Paul and that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist. Senator Rand Paul says that we wouldn't understand why parents need to control vaccinations because we don't love liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. But at the base of this issue is a question of what kind of country we want to have. Do we want to have a country where we all do some things in order for the betterment and good and safety and well-being of little people who can't defend themselves? Yeah, well, what about the fetuses? See? We're talking here in Chicago about five little babies who couldn't have vaccines because they're just too young. So the way you protect against that is by immunizing as quickly as they are able to be immunized, and that way there are less people to pass that disease along. But thanks to the anti-vaxxers, we got five in Palatine, Illinois, and who knows where it goes from there. Melanie Arnold is a spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Public Health. She said, "This just underlines the importance of everyone being vaccinated." And a reminder, measles is nothing to sneeze at. It is highly contagious. And it, among other things, can lead to brutal complications such as encephalitis, which is sometimes followed by death. So thank you, libertarians. Thank you, birchers. Thank you, birthers, deathers, tenthers, ninthers, booger eaters. Thank you, anti-vaxxers. Thank you, Alex Jones listeners. Thank you, Republicans. Thank you, one and all. Because while this issue has been painted as a both sides do it false dichotomy, I guess California liberals being blamed for part of it, the fact of the matter is there are not any politicians running around out there on the Democratic side saying, you know, I'm not so sure. Yeah, some of them played footsie with it a few years back, including that one in our White House. Back when, before he became the president. But now, no. The Democrats are solidly behind the idea of vaccinations and, you know, not causing little unvaccinated children to catch childhood diseases that they otherwise shouldn't. This is easy for communities, countries, states, counties, nation states, whatever, that value the idea of the nation as a whole. And that's why I bring this up at the beginning of the program on this here Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is another road sign. This is another road sign on the long and unpleasant trip toward the collapse of empire. When people get into power and begin to have influence, who despise the very idea of government at all, and make no mistake, libertarians and birchers and a whole bunch of Republicans despise the idea of government. They get all misty-eyed about the flag, unless you try to tell them they ought not also be flying the Confederate flag, and then they say, yeah, but what about my heritage? Old great-grandpappy committed treason against the United States, multi-great-grandpappy did, and therefore it is part of my heritage to celebrate the treason that he committed. Yeah. And I don't say this to criticize other people. I have treason in my family tree. I also have patriots. The patriots fought for the North. The traitors fought for the South. And I have, and every single soul who ever put on the uniform of the Confederacy committed treason against the United States. And I have that in my bloodline. If you were to hang around me a little while, you would find that I don't have any old Confederate battle flags laying around because, well, you know, old grand-great Uncle Uzziah, he fought for the Confederacy, and I have to celebrate the heritage. Bull. Baloney. Baloney. Now, how did we get from the measles to the Confederacy? Because the birchers and the deathers and the ninthers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and the baggers and the... they like this country well enough. But it does not suit them. It is not the country they want it to be. They have a vision for this country. And it's kind of like Somalia with cable. No word yet on how the five little baby, well, you can sort of speculate that one of the little babies brought the measles to the daycare center and spread it to the other four. That would be reasonable. Because only one person had been diagnosed with measles in Illinois previously, but hello, I guess we missed one. But it's an airborne disease. Measles, as our friend Luta pointed out the other night, was hell on earth for the native populations of this continent when white folks, disease-ridden and the filthy that we were, arrived here. There were entire communities of Native Americans who never even set eyes on a white person, who just suddenly the entire village became sick and died, many of them. And it happened all over the Western Hemisphere, not just North America. You would think we would learn, but privilege is a profound thing that is capable of insulating a whole bunch of stupid. So Dr. John sent the following along to me. It comes from Slate. It's by Joshua Keating. Slate has this thing going on, this occasional series going on, called If It Happened There. And in this occasional series, they do a story about something happening in the United States, but they write it with the supercilious tone that we use for writing about problems in places that aren't the United States, that we deem ourselves more developed than, that we deem ourselves superior to. And when I read this the other day, when Dr. John sent it to me, I thought, this sounds like it needs to be, yes, this is a perfect place for the traditional newscaster voice. Dateline, Washington, United States. Battling the country's worst measles outbreak in years, medical professionals say that many Americans' fears about Western medicine and distrust of the government are making it harder to combat the disease. The current outbreak of a disease thought to be eradicated in the country 15 years ago is believed to have begun after an unvaccinated woman visited an amusement park in the coastal state of California. More than 100 people have now been infected in 14 states. Despite funding cuts that have impacted the country's Byzantine and often insufficient health care infrastructure, vaccines against measles and other diseases are widely available. But in most regions of the country, they are optional, and many parents, under the influence of celebrities, political ideologues, and radical clerics, choose not to have their children vaccinated due to the mistaken belief that the vaccines are dangerous. As a result, this prosperous nation now has a lower vaccination rate than Zimbabwe. As in northern Nigeria and northwestern Pakistan, some American vaccine resistors are religious extremists, but many are educated middle-class secularists under the influence of dubious health fads. Political scientists also say that years of war, social disruption, and political scandal have left many Americans highly distrustful of authority, whether represented by the government, the media, or health workers. While the nation's health ministry and its embattled president have urged parents to have their children vaccinated, the message has been undermined by other prominent politicians. This week, two potential presidential candidates, the strongman chief executive of a northeastern industrial state and the charismatic anti-government physician from the central agricultural region, expressed support for the right of parents not to have their children vaccinated. Both are members of a party known for its resistance to Western science. Researchers caution that the entrenched beliefs of a mistrustful population could take years for medical workers to overcome, meaning that more outbreaks could occur or even spread to other countries in the region, most of which have higher vaccination rates than the United States. Cases linked to the current outbreak have already been detected in neighboring Mexico. Despite setbacks, U.S. health authorities insist they have the outbreak under control, and there have not yet been calls for international assistance or military intervention. I thought that thing was brilliant. I mean, the reference to Chris Christie as a strongman chief executive of a northeastern industrial state, and then Rand Paul as a charismatic anti-government physician from the central agricultural region. Oh, that's precious. That's restaurant quality. I mean, you know, that doesn't just happen. Very good, Todd. Thank you. That's Walbert Cronkade. Cronkade. And that's the way it is. In a mixed up, muddled up, screwed up, ginned up, dummied up, rubed up America of 2015. Lord. But this particular piece is brilliant on the one hand, because it shows snobbery with which we report on other countries. But it also, the beauty of it is that it presents this country in a way. What would happen? What would happen if the reportage in this country was actually like that? You think it might make a difference? Because I really think I hit on a concept talking with Dr. Bill yesterday, and I want to flesh it out a little bit more, if it's even possible to do that. This idea that the America that a lot of Americans love is a mythic America, not the real one. I want to share something with you. A friend of mine wrote this on Facebook. I don't think she even knows that I'm going to share it, but I'm not going to give any names. But it's brilliant. This friend of mine wrote, "Just exactly what do people think that the U.S. or Obama should do about the ISIS video of the murder of the Jordanian pilot? It's awful, and it's brutal. But what does it have to do with the U.S.? This country has been at war since 2001, and we're still at war. That's 14 years, trillions of your and my tax dollars spent, and thousands of U.S. citizens buried, sons and daughters. Let Jordan get fired up and join the fight against the war on terror. The war we've been fighting for 14 years now. By all means, if you guys hate Obama so much that you are willing to pay every dime you make into taxes to fight this war, go right ahead. As a matter of fact, donate any tax return you might get back to the U.S. government to fight this new war. Or better yet, donate it to a veterans organization. But most of all, give the ultimate sacrifice. Suit your kids up and ship their asses off to the Middle East. Or suit your own ass up and go. The Army's hiring every day. Put your money and kids' lives where your mouth is, because that's where my kid is. And believe you me, if you are willing to send my kid to a foreign country to fight, you better be ready to sacrifice yours, too." I read that and I about got chills. Because it's a fact. But, you see, we are a country that is patriotic about its myths, not about its realities. What, 1% of this country, and I'm not talking about the 1%, this is so not the 1%, 1% of this country has any sort of a stake in our military adventures abroad. And so that's what makes it ever so easy to say, "Hoo-ah, America," and put that little stupid yellow ribbon magnet on the back of your car. Made in China. And it's all of a piece. There's a whole bunch of this country who love an America that exists only in their imaginations, not in reality. And I submit to you that those people are your birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians. Because they think that if this country can just become a little more vile, if this country can just become a little more hateful, if this country can just become a little more bloodthirsty, if this country can just demonstrate a little bit more disdain for its own citizens, then we will cross over some sort of ideological Jordan into an Ayn Rand promised land where we all get to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and rising tides lift libertarian boats. And everybody gets frisbees and wheat checks. I mean, this is not a joke. This is for real. This is a country in crisis, a country in trouble, a country in distress. Time out. And it's important to note that it is not in distress because of liberals. It's in distress because of what America has allowed, what the American people have allowed the right wing to do to it. It turns out that the Koch brothers had their little clavern meeting last month. That's where they came up with the $889 million that they want to raise for the 2016 elections. What was that, like an auction? But that crowd, led by Charles and David Koch, have a plan for America. I remember when Newt Gingrich had his contract on America. Whew. Piano wire would have been more merciful. Thank you, Barbie. Barbie says, that's a pretty good Cronkite. I've been working on it for decades. Of course, when you hear somebody's voice for an hour a night through, you know, the first, 15 years of your life, it might just rub off. But no. Over at the Dallas Morning News, they published a column recently. The column was authored by, I presume, a couple of millionaires, Holly and Doug Deason. It was also co-signed by Thomas O. Hicks, Thomas Hicks Jr., Elaine Marshall, E. Pierce Marshall Jr., Sally and Forrest Hogland, Tandy and Leroy Mitchell, and Gala and Jim Von Ayer, all of whom are residents of Dallas. They have a vision, Holly and Doug Deason do. You wonder if they really wrote this or if Charles and David just put it together and handed them the draft and said, sign. Holly and Doug write, what do Charles and David Koch want? What about the hundreds of men and women who joined them at their recent meeting in Southern California? Including Joe Scarborough. How you doing, Chuck? Don't call me Chuck. It's Mr. Koch to you. Yes, sir. And I want you to note that this stuff is beginning to promulgate because Charles and David Koch have, because so many Americans have found out what they want to do to America, or what they have largely been successful in thus far doing to America, and how they want to finish the job. So there's a lot, if you just pay attention, you'll see that there's a lot of pieces rolling around out there. Well, they're not monsters from a foreign planet.
Hey, they'd love America, sure. Yeah, somebody play the national anthem. No, not that national anthem. The one for the country that won that revolution. Oh. Dang it! What do Charles and David Koch want? What about the hundreds of men and women who joined them at their recent meeting in Southern California? Pundits across the country have asked this question over the past week, including Dallas Morning News editorial board member Rudolph Bush. Bush? Please, no, please. We attended that meeting, and we have an answer. We want Washington to do what it hasn't done for years, work for, not against, the American people. I'd like to have a working definition from Holly and Doug. Hi, Holly. Hi, Doug. Of what it means when Washington works against America. How do we define that? Because they say Washington, D.C. has worked against the American people for years. Remember last night when Sister June was bawling and a weeping and a hooting and a screaming over the idea that working poor people might be able to go to the doctor when they're sick instead of having the same insurance coverage that Moses and the children of Israel had? That, it's working against America to try to make sure that more Americans have access to health insurance. It's working against America not to be running around running up wars on credit cards like that patriotic, proud, white American President George W. Bush did. This is not an easily achievable goal. It requires an impartial government that treats everyone equally. That's when they say that, you know that a libertarian is saying that they want to make sure that people of color never get a break. Well, you're treating everybody equally if you're only discriminating against the people you don't like. See? Equality. It requires an accountable government that is transparent and respects citizens' rights. Okay, so we're still just throwing around a lot of sort of nebulous right-wing BS talking points. This must have been done by a Charles and David Koch intern or something. It requires an efficient government that spends taxpayer money prudently and understands what it should and shouldn't do. Wouldn't you love to sit down with Doug and Holly and say, hey, Doug, Holly, come here. You? You think it was, what words did you use there? Prudently? You think we were spending money prudently when we attacked Iraq in 2003, even though Iraq had never done a daggum thing to us and didn't have nothing to do with 9/11 or anything, right? Was that prudent? It was patriotic. God wanted that. We got to do God's will. And it requires a limited government that gives everyone from Dallas to Detroit the freedom they need to succeed. Interesting, very interesting that they would mention Detroit. Because I just happened to have a note from Detroit. It came in yesterday. It was an update of sorts. Darn it. Just got to get it called up here in the email. Subject line of the email was, what's going on in Detroit? comes in from Gene. Gene writes, I just thought I'd send this to you so you would know what is going on here in Detroit. We are not giving up. Now, remember, Doug and Holly want everybody to have limited government so everybody from Dallas to Detroit can have the freedom they need to succeed. We don't know about any of the other letters of the alphabet. Dearborn, even. Denver. Dover, Delaware. Yeah, who knows? The freedom, limited government with the freedom they need to succeed. Gene writes, an estimated 62,000 homes, affecting more than 120,000 people in the Detroit area, are slated to go into property tax foreclosure in the coming months. Water shutoffs continue unabated, even during the winter months, and some City of Detroit retirees now face losing their homes after having pensions and health benefits cut drastically. The right-wing Snyder government in Lansing refuses to utilize hundreds of millions of dollars in federal housing assistance funds available in Michigan called the Hardest Hit Fund that could pay all delinquent residential tax bills in Detroit and prevent tens of thousands of persons from being evicted. Instead, federal funds are directed towards demolition of blighted homes while allowing foreclosed homes to become blighted. Well, that must be some of that limited government that gives everyone from Dallas to Detroit the freedom they need to succeed. Right, Doug? Right, Holly? Libertarian idiots. Gene continues, the Wall Street banks and others who destroyed Detroit neighborhoods through documented racist predatory loans should pay for the blight. Oh, but that would take some big government now, wouldn't it? We don't want any big government. We only have limited government. We want limited government. We want government. We want an entire government made up of little old ladies, one to a department. And if they don't get around to it, well, that's limit. That's freedom. In the least, Gene continues, the federal funds could pay off delinquent residential property tax bills and then be used by the City of Detroit for blight removal after receipt of the tax payments. Gene said, we demand stop all foreclosures and evictions. Time out. A little observation coming in from News Ninja Carol Baker. I suspect Doug and Holly, Carol says, et al., have never spent 6 months with nothing to eat but beans and rice. I suspect they've never been cold. I suspect they've spent sleepless nights wondering how they would keep the lights on. I suspect they've never gone hungry to make sure their kids got something to eat. Nope. Carol closes noting, fuck Doug and Holly et al. With a red hot poker. Oh, now, Carol. I mean, I'm sure they're lovely people. And they're probably job creators and stuff. I mean, it's not like they're some member of the hoi polloi, because the hoi polloi doesn't get invited to go out and sit in an auditorium and listen to Charles and David Koch talk about how badly, desperately, masturbatorily, anxiously they want to destroy this country. Because when a libertarian says he wants to save America, it means he wants to kill it and sell it for parts. Just turn America into a great big hillbilly wonderland where the entire country's up on blocks in the front yard. Gene says, we demand stop all foreclosures and evictions of occupied homes. Reassess all residential property taxes. Direct all of hardest hit money for saving people's homes, not blight removal. Hold banks responsible for targeting Detroiters using racist predatory loans. Restore City of Detroit retiree pensions and health benefits. Almost $6 billion was stolen from pensioners in Detroit's bankruptcy. Stop the water shutoffs now. Restore water service to those earlier cut off. Implement the Water Affordability Plan of 2005. Water is a human right. Recover the $537 million in predatory and coercive swap termination fees paid to big banks in 2012 using badly needed infrastructure repair funds. No, no, no to water rate increases. Get the union busting privatizing and profit-taking Veolia Corporation out of the Detroit Water and Sewage Department. Tell Mayor Duggan, declare a people's state of emergency in Detroit. With almost 30,000 water shutoffs in 2014, imagine that, 30,000 water shutoffs in 2014 and 62,000 tax foreclosures looming in 2015, and no end to chronic high unemployment and growing poverty, tell Mayor Duggan, we've had enough. Stop foreclosures, stop water shutoffs now. Demonstrate at the mayor's State of the City address, Tuesday, February 10th, 6 p.m., at the Redford Theater, 17360 Losser. Demand a moratorium on the tax foreclosures and water shutoffs. And I'm so grateful to Gene for sending that in because, see, this is one of those problems that affects, I suppose, any medium. If you're not out there getting information in on a regular and routine basis, in the world of the for-profit media, it's not happening. There haven't been any crews come back to West Virginia after 300,000 people lost access to clean water and got poisoned. Those questions aren't being asked anymore. Water's running again, isn't it? Well, no story. And there won't be a story 10 years from now, 15 years from now, or 20 years from now, when all of a sudden, lo and behold, there's a larger than usual, because the Kanawha Valley of West Virginia already is a cancer cluster, but when there's a larger than usual blooming of cancers. I wonder why that could be. Probably demons. There won't be, no. Did you know? Maybe you did. Maybe you followed it more closely than I have. Did you know that there were 30,000 people deprived of an essential human right in Detroit last year? Did you know that tens of thousands of people are going to be thrown out of their homes over property taxes in Detroit this year? This year. Well, they are. So understand, when Doug and Holly say that they want Detroit to have the freedom it needs to succeed, that freedom does not include federal aid to, say, help people not get foreclosed on, not be thrown out of their homes and into the streets. That's not, no, because in the libertarian, Ayn Randian, psychotic anarcho-capitalist world of Doug and Holly and Charles and David, well, that's communism, isn't it? Sure it is. But Doug and Holly continue. That's what we want. An impartial, accountable, efficient, and limited government. You always got to get that limited government in there. And I'm so sick to death with that term, I could just puke. I really am. I don't want limited government. I want a great, big, honking, fully staffed, fully functioning government to take care of the business of a great, big, honking country. See, that very term that these libertarian turds use, limited government, that tells you how out of touch with reality they are. Please to remember that a whole bunch of the job losses that came along between 2008 and now were people who were thrown out of work, who were doing the business of we the people in the federal government. That's what we want. An impartial, accountable, efficient, and limited government. Texas shows how this is possible, but Washington looks nothing like what we've described. No, they just admitted it. Now, if that doesn't give you the dribbling turtle squirts thinking that there's a whole bunch of libertarian fuckwits out there who want to turn the whole daggum country into Texas, I guess you're not as easily upset as I am. Because that's it. They just admitted it. They want to turn the United States of America into Texas. Consider this in light of what Scott Walker recently did. I don't know if you saw this or not, but Scott Walker's Wisconsin budget takes dead aim at the University of Wisconsin system. The University of Wisconsin being the absolute center core of what was called the Wisconsin idea, in which the University of Wisconsin was said to exist to solve problems and make lives better. That was the mission of the University of Wisconsin. Scott Walker has changed that. The mission of the University of Wisconsin system is now to be to make people ready for the workforce. If that doesn't, well, how much more Orwellian creepy do we need? He's cutting and slashing and burning across that system because he hates it. And when a Republican goes to slash in a university system, well, it's kind of a tell, isn't it? It tells you that the very idea of an educated population working for the betterment of the community is anathema. Because the idea of community in right-wing world is anathema. How can you have a community when we're all just out there lone wolves, you know? Pulling ourselves up by our Charles and David Koch bootstraps. You done with those bootstraps? Give them back. And this is in no wise meant to offend or demean our progressive members of the Horn Family Commune congregation in Texas, Stan. But no one knows better than a Texan progressive how dysfunctional your state government is. And they, Charles and David and Holly and Doug, want that for America. They want every state in the union that isn't already to be as fucked up as Texas is. They want every state in the union to have a fertilizer plant that can flatten an entire town in that state, just like Texas has. Oh, thank you, Gerald. Bootstraps are optional now, Gerald notes. Thanks, Obama. They want every state in the union to be as environmentally poisoned as Texas is. They want every state in the union to have 30 communities that are going to be completely out of water in a matter of a year or two because of fracking, like Texas has. Impartial? Doug and Holly write. Special interests have never been more powerful in Washington. Golly dang, look at that horse go. Better close the barn door, Holly! Both Democrats and Republicans hand out corporate welfare like it's candy, spending billions of taxpayer dollars every year to prop up well-connected businesses and individuals. See, this is the part where they hope to reel in the Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm progressives who don't know that these people are snakes. Meanwhile, politicians make millions of dollars through questionable deals and insider knowledge. We oppose everything that props up this self-serving system, including subsidies, favorable regulations, pork, and special favors.
Sure you do. Sure you do. Unless it's maybe an oil subsidy for Chuck and Dave.
Right?
Yeah. Don't want any of those pesky regulations either, do you, for the toilet paper factories that Chuck and Dave own and run, right?
Right. Accountable? The federal government increasingly stifles the free speech of its opponents.
Really? I mean, I remember George W. Bush and his free speech zones that were, you know, you could go and protest George W. Bush for being the illegitimate occupant of the White House that he was if you were willing to stand in the free speech zone that was 7.8 miles from anywhere that George Bush was, because the emperor could not stand to be confronted with the fact that everybody did not love dear leader. Both parties, see, this whole thing is one great big long both sides do it bullshit false dichotomy. Both parties have attempted to limit Americans' ability to speak their minds about elections and politicians. Last year, 54 U.S. senators voted to amend the First Amendment to give Congress unlimited power to control political speech.
Oh, look, Doug and Holly are, I thought they were concerned citizens. Turns out they're just liars.
Because nobody tried to, there was no bill to amend the First Amendment to limit political speech. There was an attempt to deal with unlimited money in our political process, which pollutes our political process like mercury does when you pour it on your morning cornflakes. Or gin, you pick.
And some federal agencies, especially the Internal Revenue Service, have targeted individuals and groups with which they disagree.
Really? We're hauling that back up again, are we?
Yeah, it's interesting. These little teabaggers like Doug and Holly here never seem to get around to mention, and I mean, I guess this means it was done to both sides, but progressive groups were scrutinized as equally as the right-wing bagger booger eater groups were.
You know, just to make sure. But the purpose of the scrutiny was to make sure that the tax-exempt status was not being abused, because tax-exempt status is being wildly abused.
Jesus God, if the NFL being a tax-exempt organization is not an abuse of tax-exempt status, what is?
Of course, we're not scrutinizing them.
Efficient? Federal spending is out of control and more wasteful than ever. Since 2009 alone, the federal government has added nearly $7.5 trillion to our national debt, and you dumbasses helped make it happen because you gave us George W. Bush. Twits.
To more than $18 trillion total, nor will America's financial future improve, with annual federal deficits expected to start climbing back up to $1 trillion or more within the next few years.
Within the next few years, because the federal deficit has fallen like a paralyzed falcon since Obama imposed the austerity measures that he did upon this country, and which have been borne more or less cheerfully by the working poor who carry this country on their back and make sure that, you know, Holly and Doug's lawn looks nice, or that their toilets are clean, or that their roads are paved, or their garbage gets picked up, or that clean water flows into their home. Because, see, they're drinking clean water that's not provided by a libertarian system.
Never mind.
Limited? Oh, we're down to the limited government part. I need to get the swirly straw and the fruit jar.
The government is so...
Wait.
So bad.
that federal officials can't keep track of the number of federal agencies. Being teabaggers, we believe that nothing should ever be larger, there should never be any more of anything than we can count without having to take our shoes off.
Right.
The Federal Register, which contains all federal law, is over 79,000 pages long.
What you reading for? Good God.
And for those innumerable federal agencies...
I don't think they're innumerable. I really don't. I'm pretty sure they're not. I'm almost certain they could be counted as a function of simple, finite, basic addition... as long as it was not being counted by a right winger.
One, two, Department of Defense, Department of Commerce, big government, big government, big government, big government, big government, big government, big government. It's innumerable. Those innumerable federal agencies have written over 175,000 pages of regulations.
What do these people have against writing? Do they want some shaman to just memorize it all? No, because that'd be a big government shaman, wouldn't it?
Red tape that costs the economy more than $1.9 trillion every year and affects your daily life without even you knowing it.
If you don't know it, and I don't want to put too fine a point on this, if you don't know it, it's not affecting you.
Well, sure it is, because you don't have freedom! Washington is broken, and it's harming the American people and destroying our country's future. Simply look around you.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
We're in the midst of the slowest economic recovery in over 50 years.
Kind of depends how you define midst.
The labor participation rate is at its lowest level since 1978 when Jimmy Carter was president.
See, that one in our White House is just a, he's just a Jimmy Carter with a big old tan.
For the first time in recorded history, more businesses are now dying than starting, and Washington is doing better than ever while the rest of America falls further behind.
God, the way they describe it, you'd think that George Bush never left office. No. If they were describing it and George Bush was president, it would be mourning in America! And so finally, the blow-off.
We believe, as do Charles and David Koch, that America deserves better.
What we deserve is Charles and David Koch as maximum overlords. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'd never dictate what kind of toilet paper we could use, would they? I mean, they wouldn't create a free market where our only freedoms, our only free choices were their toilet paper or, you know, hello, handsome. Together, we want to help the least fortunate. Sure you do. Help them what? Die. Defend individual freedom? What kind of individual freedom?
Well, the individual freedom to worship Charles and David Koch. and create lasting prosperity for more and more hard-working Americans.
Now, I don't mean if that, I don't know if that means more and more Americans who are working hard, or more and more Americans who are working more and more hard. I suspect it's the latter.
But that can't happen until Washington is impartial.
Impartial? So are they supporting a House and Senate that is evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans? That would be your impartial, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, not that kind of impartial. Impartial like where everybody's a Republican impartial. Better yet, everybody's a Libertarian. Better yet, everybody in Washington is on the Charles and David Koch payroll. That kind of impartial. They all impartially are beholden to David and Charles Koch, okay? You know, just like Nova is.
Good Lord.
But that can't happen until Washington is impartial, accountable, efficient, and limited.
We're going to chop off its hands, Washington. Maybe a couple of toes. Mail it to the rest of America until they meet our demands.
More fracking! This is what we want. And we will pursue it, no matter how long it takes.
Well, it's not really no matter how long it takes. It's no matter how much money it takes, and they have pretty much an unlimited amount.
Right.
They're coming for you. They're coming for us. And if they and they're well on the way to getting what they want. Very well on the way. The question is, strongly but nonviolently, how do we stop them? Because if we don't, there won't be anything left to fix. Remember, this is the same libertarian impulse that says it's more important for children for parents to be able to keep their children from getting vaccinated than it is for five little babies to not get measles. You see, mommy and daddy were free not to vaccinate, and those five babies are free to live or die. And that's just how it is sometimes. You can't make an omelet without burying some infants. Right? Yeah. So, let's take a break. It being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we have the Green News Report coming in fairly short order. Your calls also as part of the conversation radio aspect of the program. The numbers 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. That's the gizmo line. Okay? And let me just double check. Pretty sure it hasn't, but we have a $260 fundraising hole this evening. Our dear friend Robert in Australia really went the extra mile last night to keep it from being a $360 hole. We have a challenge on the table, Jake Rusin's Power Mad Challenge. And up to the first $100 in contributions, he will match
but it has to happen during the program. Thus far, nothing. Yeah. So, a break, and then hopefully your calls. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Living in this wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and dynamite. Inner speech is growing increasingly unkind. Politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. You may call me old fashioned, but I don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in this wasteland. We got CEOs making 200 times your worker pay. They'll fight like hell against raising the minimum wage. If you don't like it, mister, they'll ship your job to some third world country across the sea. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland. Little kids with guns fighting inner city wars. So what do? We put these little kids behind prison doors. We call ourselves the advanced civilization. That sounds like crap to me. Feels like I am living in the wasteland. We
Thursday, February 5th, 2015.
Coal is not good for humanity, just as Tony Abbott is not good for the planet.
Ouch! Australia's climate-denying Prime Minister takes a drubbing.
This is the highest number I've had in all my career, 29-year career.
Record number of baby sea lions washing ashore in California. BP's missing oil has been found at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. Plus, the first presidential warning on global warming was issued 50 years ago.
All of those warnings and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, there is still a debate on climate change.
But there is no debate on the fact that the Koch brothers really got their money's worth when they invited Joe Scarborough to spend the week with them in Palm Springs. Am I right, liberal MSNBC? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Joe Scarborough, the former Republican congressman with a three-hour morning show on that quote-unquote liberal MSNBC, he has been on a roll. Earlier this week, he called people who oppose the Keystone XL pipeline science deniers.
Yep.
And now he's pretending there's some huge debate about global warming. It pays off when you're a Koch brother and you invite these media guys out to spend time with you, doesn't it?
Apparently.
They should try inviting me out for a free weekend. I'd go.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Can I be bought? Maybe. What do you have for us today, Des?
Well, first, Pope Francis will address a joint session of Congress in September, the first pope in U.S. history to do so. Now, this is a big deal, not just because he's the first pope to do so, but because he is very likely to push Congress to act on climate change as part of a plan to pressure governments to commit to an ambitious U.N. climate treaty in Paris in December.
Remember when Republicans used to like the pope?
Bad news for Australia's right-wing climate change denying Prime Minister Tony Abbott. His party lost big in a statewide referendum to subsidize coal this week. In the run-up to the election, Green Party leader Christine Milne slammed Abbott.
Coal is not good for humanity, just as Tony Abbott is not good for the planet when we're talking about global warming.
Voters in Queensland this week chose to protect the Great Barrier Reef and reject Abbott's scheme to sell off some of Australia's assets to private developers in order to subsidize more coal export infrastructure.
Abbott appears to be in real political trouble. And this is after he came aboard only about a year ago and immediately canceled Australia's landmark carbon tax. But this is to be expected. Here's Tony Abbott back in 2011 denying reality.
We've had, if anything, cooling global temperatures over the last decade.
He was completely wrong.
Right.
And he goes on to describe people like you, Desi Doyen, as climate catastrophists.
Yeah, well, he's also not paying attention to the catastrophe of Australia's coal exports. China is already cutting back hugely on its purchase of coal from Australia and is now going even further. A Chinese government official announced this week China is launching the first stages of its national carbon cap and trade system. It'll begin with capping emissions in carbon-intensive industrial sectors.
Is it too harsh or is it too ironic to call fossil fuel lovers like Tony Abbott dinosaurs at this point?
Warming oceans may be the culprit behind the record number of malnourished and sick baby sea lions washing up on the shores of California. 275 baby sea lions have been rescued in just the last month, according to the director of Marine Animal Rescue, Peter Wallerstein, on CBS News.
It's a red flag for the scientists to find out what's going on with them.
Several studies have found that record high ocean temperatures are driving bait fish, the sea lion's primary food source, into deeper, colder waters where the baby sea lions can't get to them. The missing oil from BP's catastrophic spill 5 years ago was not dispersed. It was not cleaned up. It has instead settled to the bottom of the Gulf like an oily bathtub ring on the sea floor. Researchers from Florida State University estimate about 10 million gallons of crude oil from the 2010 spill have settled on the seafloor. It's roughly the size of Rhode Island, and it's still threatening wildlife and marine ecosystems. Finally, Sunday, February 8th, marks the 50th anniversary of an official special message from President Lyndon Johnson to Congress, warning about the dangers of global warming. 50 years ago, Johnson told Congress, quote, "This generation has altered the composition of the atmosphere on a global scale through radioactive materials and a steady increase in carbon dioxide from the burning of fossil fuels."
Really?
Yes, that message was the first time a U.S. president officially warned of the risk of fossil fuel carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Since Johnson's warning 50 years ago, world annual average temperatures have gone up 1 degree Fahrenheit and CO2 levels have gone up 25%.
I had no idea that Johnson tied together carbon dioxide and global warming 50 years ago. Who made that discovery?
That was the folks at dailyclimate.org.
Well done, guys. For much more on that and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation when you stop by. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, 5th day of February, 2015. This is the Horn, and we're going to go right to the phones. We got folks on both lines, and we'll get there right quick. Just a quick trip to the email, with regard to the story about that Gene sent us about Detroit and water. Jack in Shreveport says, for those planning to vote GOP, recall that Romney was recorded saying something like, people don't deserve water as a right. I thought that was the president of Nestle, Jack. Meanwhile, Jack also points out, the right-wingers never mentioned that part of the national debt or whatever, wherever it went, is from Obama putting the war budget that Bush had kept separate from the main budget. Yeah, we got it. He took it off the credit card. He took it off the, yeah, exactly. Let's see. A couple of notes here. One coming from News Ninja Carol Baker. She said, after our little foray into the busy, busy, terrifying minds of Doug and Holly there, Carol noted, I shot myself with your Thorazine dart, Bob. Sorry, I only had enough for one. Well, that's what the fruit jar and the swirly straw is for. I mean, I'm a giver. Carol also notes, I'd like to add, it always seems like it's the same people contributing to the program. If people have never given a dime before, the stuff doesn't come cheap, and they can and should pony up a little. Thank you, Carol. Thank you. Let's see here. Thank you, Sparky. Sparky jumped in on Jay Cruzan's Power Mad Challenge for this evening. Remember, we're trying to raise $260. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you very, very kindly. $75 to go on the challenge. And then Jay took it down by another 20. Okay, so there's $50 to go on the challenge. And there's $30 to go on the challenge. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly. So $30 to go on Jay Cruzan's Power Mad Challenge, $90 to go to get out of the hole this evening. Mighty helpful indeed. Thank you. Let's go immediately to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, no. Yeah, wait. Darn it. I think we had John there. I lost John. Bill, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. Then you were on the money tonight with the anti-vaccination thing. There's a lot of that leadership. There's a young woman who used to be on the Saturday Night Live. McCarthy, the last name is.
Wait, what?
Cause I don't know. There was a young woman who's, I knew her aunt. She worked at a restaurant around here, and she played the the Catholic schoolgirl on that show.
Oh, I know. I know who, yeah. Dead brain cells.
Yeah. It wasn't the same woman, I don't think, was it?
If we're talking about the same character.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Catholic school. I never watched the show too much, Bob. I was too busy writing my own version of it in some bar or the other, you know? Same behavior patterns, only they were completely loaded, but I was just wondering about that, because the idea of not vaccinating is just, I can't believe it. Well, you remember what you read about what smallpox did?
Sure.
And it's hate.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the Civil War, there were so many cases of mumps, because these men hadn't been farther than 20 miles from their home in their whole life. And here they're thrown into a conglomerate of men from all over the state, and, Army life standards were not quite well in those days, especially.
Okay, by the way, let me back up. Yeah, it's all squared away now. I was thinking of Molly Shannon on Saturday Night Live. You were talking about Jenny McCarthy.
Molly Shannon, because I knew her. She worked in a restaurant.
Jenny McCarthy is the anti-vaxxer.
Yeah, that's what I thought. There's a lot of that going around, though. I hear some people whose kids have autism, and they're blaming a lot of it was being.
And there is no scientific. There is no scientific link whatsoever. You know, that's what. That was the veiled reference that Rand Paul and that thing on his head made the other night, or the other day, when he was talking about, I've heard about perfectly healthy children who got vaccinated, and then they had, then they were mentally crippled, or whatever it was he said.
Well, the only point I'll give anybody is that, who puts together these vaccines? Pharmaceutical companies, right?
Right, but then again, I don't want vaccines that have been put together by Walmart.
Yeah, who is supposed to do it? Yeah.
I mean, we have to come to terms, and I think the terms, yeah. Phil, are of cogent and rational regulation. We have to come to terms.
Yep.
With, I mean, this is we live in a culture that we can't do without corporations. Not that I can figure out, and I've actually expended a little skull sweat on the idea. We can't do without them. I don't want to fly from Charleston, West Virginia to, say, L.A. or Cleveland on a plane that's being run by a Homer Noodleman that he rolls out of his barn every morning. Okay?
Yeah.
It's too big a job. It can't... We couldn't have cell phone companies without rather large corporate entities, airlines. If you look back in history, and history is where you and I spend all our time anyway. The great trading companies, for good or ill, arose out of conglomerates that formed together to share the risk in order to do the trading. And even the insurance industry is born in a coffee house in London that was named Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's was a coffee house. And people who were going to, say, finance a voyage to China, India, say, would get together and they would pool their money and they would then pool their risk.
Yeah.
And that was that's the birth of Lloyd's of London. It's also part and parcel with the birth of corporate structures. The East India Company comes to mind. And yes, almost right off the bat, they started misbehaving and acting brutally and brutally in their own self-interest. And that's why I said, The
rational and prudent regulation of these corporations is how we get from point A to point B in a modern world. I mean, it's regulations that keep airplanes from crashing more often than they do. It's also a matter of having, you know, I feel safer on an airline where I know the baggage handlers and the pilots and the flight attendants and the mechanics and the machinists are union workers. Unfortunately, I don't get to feel that very often because the dominant airline flying out of Charleston, West Virginia is Delta. And Delta is the single most notoriously anti-union airline out there.
Well, when I was playing at this Euclid Tavern, which is right across from a big factory, at one time, point in time, the Ford Tri-Motors were built there. And hell, they were flying those out of the Lake Erie Islands in the 60s. They were still flying those Tri-Motors. But, yeah, and the other thing is, like my dad, when he was working during World War II, you know, playing music, but he was still working in a plant, and he was an inspector of parts. And later in the year, he said, Bill, I took that so seriously because, you know, people were going up in that thing. And you had to, you know, when you were an inspector, the thing had to be flawless, and you didn't want it going into a plane, you know. But sometimes I wonder anymore, didn't Bush cut off a whole lot of meat inspectors, federal meat inspectors?
I think you're right.
Yep. And I'll just leave it so simple. If you want to know about meat inspectors, because I don't think kids read the same stuff that I had to read, like The Jungle.
Oh, no.
That was told about Carol, you know.
No, you've got right-wing harpy mommies out there now who have a fit if children are asked to read in 12th grade, even, when we're talking about young adults. If they're asked to read anything about the social problems or income inequality. We had one of those mommies down in Texas not too long back who said, well, if they're going to have to read that, then they should have to read Atlas Shrugged, too.
Oh, God. Well, that woman's name.
Which tells me that idiot has never read it, because there are some of the nastiest sex scenes ever I have read in that god-awful book. And by nasty, I'm not talking about the beauties of human sexuality. I'm talking about some just filthy, dirty, awful, rotten, nasty writing. As in Truman Capote saying, that's not writing, that's typing.
Well, I'll tell you what, I never could see her. Where the hell did she get her background? That woman's background is not really good, you know. She was one step, wasn't she one step ahead of the,
Well, you can say whatever you want to say about the Bolsheviks in Russia, but you got to give them credit. They managed to get rid of Ayn Rand and foist her off on us.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to hold the line down, but I like to know from people. There are people who know more than me. It's very hard. My computer is the old one. It's very hard to get Google to work for you and come up with information. But I'll let you go, and thanks for the information, because I wasn't quite sure who was the people who were pushing for this no vaccine stuff, you know.
Well, I mean, there are apparently some liberals out there who think that they've found some bullshit science on the interweb tube somewhere that makes them think that maybe their precious little lumpkin ought not be vaccinated. You would hope that they can be convinced otherwise, but there was recently a study, I saw a story about it over at Mother Jones, there was a study that said that every method that has been used to try to change anti-vaxxers' minds failed.
Yeah.
Failed.
Because, well, I don't know about you, but I had them all, Bob. I mean, I was 13 years old and went in for the Salk and the Sabin, you know, because that was the one thing about polio. It could hit you when you were 35 years old. And so try this stuff. And I had a friend of mine who had it as a kid, and all you had to do, Bob, was ever see a movie of a somebody in the so-called iron lung. You ever seen that one?
Yep.
Yeah. It makes you shudder even to this day. Anyhow, go on ahead and thanks, because that's what I like about the horn is I can get some education in areas that I'm not too sure of. You know, that's what I like about the professor. Although I'll tell you what, it makes you so sick of how the Constitution was arrived at. You know, the horse trading and the pie throwing and everything that went on in those days was pretty horrendous. It's a wonder we survived.
Well, you know, the single best way to understand the Constitution is just to listen to every single one of Dr. Bill's podcasts.
Yes, sir.
And he will, and along the way, he'll suggest books. Because he's not just getting out there and pontificating. This is based on stuff that he has read. By the way,
yeah.
we did get it all sorted out. I think okay. So the Saturday Night Live teabagger is Victoria Jackson. I didn't fully understand your question. The Saturday Night Live teabagger is Victoria Jackson. The anti-vaxxer is Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah, because what were you talking about her last night?
Not really, no, I don't think.
Somebody was talking about the anti-vaccine situation that these people are coming
up
with.
We talked about it topically, but I don't think Jenny McCarthy came into the conversation. She's just an idiot.
Well, I've had a few friends who, unfortunately, have had grandchildren that are autistic, and who the hell knows, you know? Was it always there and we never knew about it? Is that the story?
You mean the anti-vax the anti-vax movement or what?
Autism.
Oh no no no! Well,
bigger and bigger.
That's I don't necessarily know what the answer is to that. I know there were some studies done that focused on Amish communities, and the incidence of autism in those communities. I can't speak cogently on it.
Yeah. One of my friends took over. Her daughter gave up on her son, and my friend is raising her grandson who has a problem with autism, and I don't know. Just when you think you have all the answers, Bob, they change their questions around.
Oh, without a doubt. By the way, you've got kudos coming in from the angry Indian who applauds your reference to the jungle.
Well, he's one of my favorite people too because I've read a little bit here and there and seen what these he might call it the Rez situation. Well, how bad that is, those folks just get ignored. We're too busy. We got to fight for somebody overseas so we can steal their, whatever they're selling. We can get a good price out of it. And they held up the Native Americans of all walks of life, but especially the ones that are the folks that were here first, you know. Anyway, you take it easy.
All right. You have a good one, Bill.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And thank you, Sal. Sal jumped in. We've got $25 to go to meet Jason's Power Mad Challenge and Carol encouraging and exhorting people onward to, if you've never contributed before and you're a listener of long time, short time, whatever, to kick in. You know, look, we try to think about it this way. We try to raise $150 a night. That is 30 people at $5 a piece. If we could do that, well, the listenership is sufficient that we could get that out of the way pretty quick. But there we go. So Carol's point is well taken. But again, we got $25 to go to finish Jay Cruzan's Power Mad Challenge and $85 to go to finish off the fundraising for the entire evening. And hey, a little more than half the program to go to get it done in. I'm going to be an optimist. I think we can. Let's go back. Is that you, John?
Yeah, it is me. Cool. You have had a wonderful opportunity to irritate me over the last couple of days. Very good irritation, but irritation nonetheless between the crying preacher girl and the nouveau rich Dallas people. I start thinking bell towers and high power rifles.
Clown suits.
But anyway, you can. I don't know if your accounting does it that way, but I will stick a $25 money order in the mail for you tomorrow.
Thank you very kindly. So that takes care of the challenge. Thank you, John.
Yeah. I'll get on the website and run your address down and stuff like that. And
let me just say it now, and then you can go back and replay it, because I don't think it's even on the website right now. We got stuff to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And we'll note that if you want to fast forward in the podcast, this happened an hour and 40 minutes into the program.
Okay, that's fine. I get your podcasts on my little Stitcher thingy, so I can run it down that way. All right. You want to know what one of the most highest yielding lucrative investments there is?
If you say gold, we're going to have a problem.
No, it's called tax certificates.
Really?
When a local government, say Detroit, has a bunch of outstanding property tax debt that's owed to them,
yeah.
Well, what they'll do is they'll create a certificate and they'll put it up on the market. Now, most investments and most loans and other things have things like usury laws that are attached. There's a limit to how much you can charge on interest. The number escapes me exactly. But tax certificates, because they're issued by the state or by the city or by county, are exempt from tax, from usury laws, and therefore your interest rates on those can get upwards to 15-20% interest on those things. And you have the advantage that if the note is not paid off in a given period of time, the holder of the certificate can foreclose on said property. You can pretty much bet your butt that mess that's going on in Detroit is a bunch of private equity firms have bought up the tax certificates for these houses, and now that it's been about 2 or 3 years since the big crash, now they're cashing in. They're going to force these people to sell out. They're going to force them to sell out for dimes on a dollar. Foreclosed, blighted housing, low value. These people will be forced to sell for nothing, basically. The tax certificates are guaranteed because their first step in the payment schedule on any bankruptcy or any sales, government tax liens are considered first up. So
tax liens always get preference. Everything else is junior to the taxes.
Exactly. And so here's your, and I'll just be mean and call it David Koch and the Charles Koch Investment Group Guide 101 to how to make money off poor people. Take what little they have. They can't pay their taxes, so we'll buy their tax certificates. The government that's issued the lien will get the money they need to continue running their police departments, their fire departments, and all that stuff. And the private guy now gets to walk away with a big interest rate.
Well, one of the things, when I first started learning about state government here in West Virginia, and I didn't know it, is at least here, and you want to talk about a dodge, the assessor and the sheriff, the high sheriff, in each county in West Virginia is incentivized toward tax collection
by virtue of the fact that they don't just get a salary, they get a cut.
Yep.
And
floating around, I mean, 12%.
And pardon me if I think that that's just, I mean, is that wrong?
Oh, past wrong. I mean,
shouldn't the high sheriffs have the high sheriff's salary and that's it? Because see, county prosecutor doesn't get a cut of fines paid to the court.
Yeah, but I forget. I cannot remember the guy's name, but there was a lawyer, fairly liberal guy. I think I picture him in my mind. He wore buckskin outfits a lot.
Oh, Jerry Spence.
Could have been him, but it might have been somebody else. But he made a comment one time that always stuck in my head, is that he said it's very difficult to have justice when the people running the justice system are making money off of it. And I'm paraphrasing the hell out of it, but that stuck in my head a lot. I mean, when you've got police departments that are literally dependent upon traffic tickets. When you have, you know, like this high sheriff thing, he's going to get that new discounted armored personnel vehicle by taking the bonus money he gets off his tax collection and his eviction fees to go get that fancy piece of equipment so that he can pretend he's a super sheriff. And, I mean, the whole system is so bloody corrupt, it's not even funny. I mean, I delivered in Detroit area about a month ago. And if you had been looking at pictures of different parts of the world, it would be very possible for you to get the picture of Detroit and the picture of circa 2005 Baghdad and get them mixed up.
Oh, Jesus.
Because there are parts of that city that are... as of less than 6 months ago, was, you know, the only thing missing was the bomb craters. And now you have, and there's been a big flood over the last year or so of what they call private equity money. Private equity money has been flowing into Detroit like water out of a garden hose. They're buying up everything that's not nailed down.
Yeah, well, Detroit is being liquidated and converted.
Yeah.
And I use the word converted in its legal sense, and I think you may know what that is. Conversion is the in the criminal law we call it larceny. If you're suing over it, it's conversion. It's the conversion of someone else's property to your property, and so Detroit is in the process of being liquidated and converted, because of course Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, is an anarcho-randian libertarian thug.
You're so polite.
Well, I'm fresh out of sweetness and light here, John. They're
plenty. No, I'm saying you're being polite. I would have called him something a little more four-letter wordy. Because these guys, the only thing that separates them from the freaking from the thieves that they throw in jail is the mask.
Well,
precisely.
No doubt. Yeah. No, I get your point. If only we could get, say, hedge fund traders to pull a pair of pantyhose over their head, we might understand the nature of the business a little bit better.
Oh, beyond a doubt. You know, I was one of those people that looked into things like the Carlton Sheets real estate deal, because there was a time in my life when I actually had the great hope of becoming a rich guy and, you know, maybe swirling a few Mai Tais and having a, you know, beautiful Asian girl on the right arm and a beautiful white girl on the left arm and a little African girl on my feet, things like that. You know, I dreamed those dreams, and so I'd look at things like Carlton Sheets' little real estate program and Laurel Langmire's program, and I looked into the tax certificate thing, because it was another group of guys out there, you know, selling that, get into this and you'll make lots and lots of money. And I guess maybe I'm destined to always be poor, because the more I looked at those things, the more I saw that in America, in I guess in this modern world, the way to get rich is to figure out a way to legally steal it from somebody else.
Well, to steal it under color of law, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, when I looked into the tax certificates, the mechanics of it were so simple. You get in, you buy the certificate, you hold on to it for about, I think there was like a minimum 3-year period or something like that. But all the while, the 3 years, you're making 15 to 18% interest at the time. May not be as much now because interest rates have gone down so much, but at the time it was a...
Darcy just messaged me and told me that Quicken Loans is buying up a whole bunch of Detroit.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me a bit.
And see, the concept, as you describe it, I'd never heard of tax certificates as such, but the concept, as you describe it, is not a new one, John. It's in the former days, it was called tax farming.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, here I go wandering off into the ancients, but when ancient Rome needed to raise money, well, they had taxes. But instead of having a bureaucracy that would collect it on a fair and equitable basis, they had tax farmers. So what you would do is, if you were filthy, stinking rich, you would bid on, say, Palestine. And if your bid won, you would then sail off with your tax collectors to Palestine. And you would proceed to shake down the locals. Now, the trick was to be able to shake down the locals for more than the tax bill that was due. And Rome just kind of looked the other way. And it is at least analogous to what you're describing, John, where they can just let the tax certificate lay around and accrue interest and then demand the principal and the interest and foreclose and, you know, collect it all and get the property to sell. And it's the direct antithesis, of course, to progressive taxation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the guy who has a tax certificate to get the property, he of course would have to buy the property. But since he's already invested X number of thousands of dollars in the certificate, he already has a leg up.
Right.
He gets to get it for cheaper than anyone else would get it because he's already put money into it. And so,
there are some states where those taxes can be used to actually imprison people. Florida is one of them. I remember several years ago, a couple of years ago at least, Sandra and I talked for a considerable period of time about that very topic. Alabama's another one. You can be jailed over delinquent property taxes.
Yep, so delinquent property taxes, and another big one nowadays because it's so politically correct is back child support. You get some poor guy out there that, okay, we, for the moment, for the sake of our conversation, we won't get into the depths of maybe why that, he got into that, he got divorced or whatever, and he has child support. Okay, but if he loses his job, now there are a lot of scumbags out there, don't get me wrong. But if an honest fellow loses his job and he falls behind on his child support payments, the courts can toss him in jail for the same reason. Because, and it's a particularly easy thing to do because, not paying your child support is, what they call it's a politically good thing. Because everybody's in, if you got to pay child support, you should pay child support. But when you get into some of the details and get where the rubber meets the road, as Ross Perot had said, there's a lot of guys out there that, they fall so far behind, and then the warrant comes out and they're trying to find a job and things like that, but those judges don't give a damn. Oh, you still have a car. Why didn't you sell your car or pay your child support? Because if I sell my car, I can't get a job. Well, that's not a court's problem, Like I said, I lived on the streets for a while, and that was actually one reason why a lot of guys ended up on the streets, because they would be, they would be thousands of dollars behind on their child support, and they had, you know, again, you know, insert the caveat about the story, but I would imagine at least a good percentage of them were at least had made some good faith effort to do so. But once that interest starts building up, you hit
it's,
into a hole.
But it's surprisingly now, what's interesting out of that is that, you know, there's child support enforcement, which is of a civil nature, and then there's the criminal statute for deadbeat dads. And this is incredibly frustrating for anybody who's earnestly trying to do right in this thing, because most, or at least in many states, there is a weasel word in the criminal statute. And remember, in dealing with a criminal case, you have to prove every element of the crime charged beyond a reasonable doubt. And the word reasonable ability to pay exists in those criminal statutes. And you can sit there and tie a jury in knots over the question of reasonability.
Yeah, you can do that, and you know that's one of the difficulties of our modern world is that, you know, I had a fascinating discussion today with some people, you know, in and around the truck stop table, and the argument that was in process there was, you know, the very aspect, and we were talking a lot about this anti-vaxxer stuff, because there was a couple of guys that were doing the same thing. You know, I shouldn't be made to make my child, and I'm going, I said, it's not a question of whether to make your child or make you do it. I said, you're in a world, and this is something that these libertarian freakazoids don't understand, is that your magic world of individual bootstrap pulling self does not exist anymore.
Never did. I mean,
well,
from
I mean
the,
we could argue. I mean, we could sit back and argue about the Daniel Boone days when, you know, he went out and clubbed the bear with his
yeah, but Daniel Boone needed people to finance his adventures.
Yeah,
and he darn but, sure, yeah. he darn, you know, it's kind of like the Lewis and Clark expedition. We call it the Lewis and Clark expedition, but it was really the Lewis and Clark and Lewis's slave and 40 other people with some government money expedition.
Yeah, but you get the idea what I'm talking about.
I think any time that you see someone who is held up as a self-made man, or you see someone who pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, odds are, if you scratch the surface, you're going to find that there were a hell of a lot of other people in his community tugging on them bootstraps, too.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that part of the reason he pulled himself by his bootstraps is because he stepped on the people in front of him to get to those bootstraps.
Well, right, exactly. Yeah. What's that old saying, behind every great business success, there's a great crime?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it's like, you know, you sit there, you know, It kind of almost refers us back to our conversation we had earlier in the week. You got these well-heeled, wrapped up in soft clothing, you know, analysts and talkers who get on the TV and talk about this magic world that they think that exists right around the corner. And you said it yourself earlier, these people never took a freaking day. They never worried whether or not there was going to be some nice nutritious food on the table, and that their house was always paid for, and their lives were all swaddled and secure because they played the game the way that the game was supposed to be played. They was born to the right families. They went to the right schools. They got the help just at the right time, but the right way. And now they sit there in Dallas. I mean, just the fact that they got an invitation to go to this conclave in Palm Springs tells you everything you need to know about them. I would suspect they're probably the Dallas married couple, probably made money in real estate.
Or some hydrocarbon.
Could be. You know, however they made their money, but these people don't work for a living. And I hate, sometimes I hate myself for sounding so mean, but when you get to those levels, when you can sit there and go to these conclaves and write million-dollar checks for political parties, you don't work for a living anymore.
No, there's
an office.
One of my favorite films is John Sayles' 1980s classic Make One, and the union organizer in character in that film, Joe Keenihan, is explaining there is only two kinds of people in the world, them that work and them that don't. You work.
Yep.
And really, I mean, that's a significant problem in the United States today, John, because if you take, let's say you're a some sort of computer person who is making a tidy little salary. You know, maybe you're in the mid-100,000. Okay, you know you're comfortable. You're not. Well, I don't. You know, it depends on how many kids you got, what kind of life you want to lead. You know, maybe you're socking it all away for retirement. Who knows? But convincing one of those people that they're a working stiff, just like the guy down there at the garage with engine grease all over his hands. They don't want to think that they're in that same club. They don't want to be in the same neighborhood. They don't want to be thought of in the same breath. No, by God, I'm white collar. He's blue. You're both workers, folks.
Exactly.
Because if somebody and you know what? The fact of the matter is, John, the same thing goes for LeBron James. The same thing goes because unless if someone else's name is on your payday, you're a worker.
Exactly. Now these people sit there and they'll, you know, there's another little podcast I listened to, little fellow out in Singapore. Now his big shtick is he basically beats the hell out of the United States in order to talk people into, I'm assuming his stick is eventually he gets one or two people of the people who listen to his broadcast that will contact him, and eventually they'll become expats. They'll go off and move into Bolivia or someplace out in the world somewhere, and he would run their money or help convert them over to. So I'm assuming that's his stick. But it's a fascinating thing to listen to his conversation, because he had a thing on this week was actually very fascinating. He talked about the fact that, and I kind of agree with him to some degree. He says a lot of the jobs that are out there right now are valued only because the 1% value them. A money manager, an attorney, an accountant, or an analyst, a financial analyst, or all these different jobs that sit in the management, middle management, stuff like that. But those jobs only exist in order to facilitate the 1% to manage their stuff.
Yeah.
Those jobs would not exist if the 1% was not raking it in hand over fist and stealing it left, right, and sideways.
But see, it's not just the money managers. I mean, you gotta have somebody to. It's amazing. If you pull your Mercedes Benz or your Porsche or your Audi or whatever, I got a thing about German cars, in to have it serviced, worked on, whatever. The guys in that garage are wearing lab coats like they're freaking doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he values them too, but the problem.
Yeah, he values them.
But the thing is, he doesn't value them. He values the job creators who made them who they are.
And
I think there's a difference between those two viewpoints.
Yeah. Well, see, that's those people in those lab coats are who these people talk about when they talk about we're job creators. People that serve us, I drive a truck, okay? My truck now, when it has to go into service, goes into one of these dealership deals. And, of course, these things are so complicated now, you don't have a shade tree mechanic anymore. You don't have somebody that says, change the stuff. No, they got to plug a computer up to it and do all this stuff. But here's the trick, and I'll tell you this right now, and you may well be amazed. the dealerships and stuff that I deal with on, you know, when our truck breaks down, and particularly the ones that run through my company, that are contracted through my company, they cannot keep workers because they do not want to pay them. They run through a training program, they'll have them, but as soon as that training program is over, these guys are out looking for another job because they're making nothing. And these are highly skilled positions. I couldn't possibly do it. But even these guys are being beaten down into the ground. Oh, you have all this technological knowledge. You know how to diagnose and fix a diesel engine. Congratulations, we'll pay you $15 an hour. Now, weren't we just talking about this 6 months ago as being the hope of a minimum wage was $15 an hour?
Yes. Yes.
And yet...
And look, I mean, that, and that's where, for instance, with this prevailing wage bill that's being pondered in the new teabagger West Virginia legislature, you know, that's their dream, is that highly skilled building trades workers will get the minimum wage they think everybody ought to have, $15.
Yeah, exactly. And
but you're not gonna keep people in that position at that money, unless you've got an amount of economic desperation that borders on Great Depression era status.
The trick that they're trying to do now is the companies are financing their education so that they have a debt with the company.
Isn't that clever?
It's a little trick. You're seeing it now, and although it's not as hard as it could be, but you're even seeing that in the driver's recruiting. Come, we'll train you. And you build up this I'm long since past that point, but, $2,000-$3,000 debt, come work for us, but you gotta work for us for a period of time in order to quote unquote pay off the debt.
That's called indentured servitude, and it's actually illegal under the Constitution, but who's looking?
Oh yeah, well, that's, you know, the Constitution, that, that and the toilet paper to some of these guys is the same thing. You know, your Dr. Bill there is a, you know, I periodically, when I'm on a long run, I'm not, you know, not in the mood to listen to the live radio, I'll fire up one of his programs off the website, and I'll fire that thing and listen to it. And usually by about halfway through, you know, I'm gnashing my teeth and going, good night, freaking shirt. I hate to say it, but, you know, the founding fathers, you know, if you look at them objectively, you wonder, some of them guys could just as easily be transferred right back into our world right now. If you think about the underlying rationales of why they did what they did. And it's scary. You know, yes, they were some enlightened people and they did do their best, but my understanding of Dr. Bill, these guys were running from an idea that democracy, oh my God, this thing's starting to fly off the rails here. We're losing control. We gotta fix this. And that stuff just comes back and bites you in the butt.
Well, a minute ago you were talking about the skills of a diesel mechanic.
Yeah.
And I have maybe I have a different viewpoint than some people, John. But if you look at the degree of specialization in medicine now, there's a whole bunch of doctors out there who are little more than technicians.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, maybe they've had 8 years of medical education, and I'm not trying to demean the profession, but look at the degree of mechanization inside the profession. You've got surgeons now who would be hard pressed to open up a belly and take out an appendix old school without killing somebody.
Oh yeah.
Because all they know how to do is cut four holes in a belly and stick the stuff in and work with a laparoscope. Or the surgeons who are experts with the Da Vinci auto surgeon. And they literally sit as far away from the patient as they can get, and they work video game controls and let the robot
do all the cutting and the cauterizing and the vacuuming and the yada, yada, yada. And the reason I bring that up is not to demean it. I think it's technologically magnificent and amazing. But...
well, it devalues the doctor. I mean, he becomes just another component that can be replaced.
Well, there's that. And there's also the fact that, yes, human lives are at stake in medicine. No getting around that. I'm not trying to suggest otherwise. And I'm not suggesting that a diesel engine is the same thing as a human being. But technical skills have value. Let's say that our laparoscopist drives his Mercedes Blue Tech diesel to work every morning. Well, you know what? If he can't get his diesel engine Mercedes out of the garage, what happens to the emergency patient who shows up needing surgery right then and there?
Exactly.
And so suddenly that diesel mechanic is, you know, he's something more than a blue collar worker. By God, he is involved in life saving. You know, the guy who does brakes. You know, I'm not going to get my brakes done by a guy with gin on his breath. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are skill sets involved, and there are serious ramifications. Look at those job-killing regulations. Do we really want to get rid of like that asshole was talking about a couple of nights ago? Yeah, I just want them to put up a sign that says we don't wash our hands after we go to the potty, and the free market will take care of the rest of it. Now, that guy is a brand-new Republican senator elected to the Senate of the United States from North Carolina.
Yep.
And you know, the way you get to a mindset like that is by looking at workers as being little more than tools or puzzle pieces. I wonder how he'd like it if he walked into that same Starbucks and there was somebody sneezing their fool head off making his venti mocha half calf soy milk macchiato latte. I'll bet he might want a regulation that said that person needed to wear a mask. Because it's his. It's not the lumpin' proletariat's coffee. It's his coffee.
Yeah, because you just struck the core of libertarian and / Republican mindset. You saw it back, I totally forget this guy's name, but there was a senator or congressman, big anti-gay. Until his son came out. And all of a sudden, he started toning it down. These people have no empathy. They do not care about anybody that is not connected to them.
I think at that point in time, John, we're getting very, very close to the definition of sociopath. And I think it can be argued that libertarians have at least a taste for sociopathy.
Well, you remember that Harvard study was done some years back when the meme first started popping up really big about corporations or people and everything. Well, it was a group of Harvard psychologists and MDs and all the other you know five letters named after their name stuff, and they went and did a study. They threw big money at it and did a study and said, if we're going to actually come at this as if corporations were actually people, let's look at what corporations do, how they act, the mindset that goes with them, and let's see, we'll break out that book that the physician's reference of neurological or mental disorders or whatever, the master book they have, and compare it and see what it comes up with. And that's exactly what they came up with. Corporations, by definition, are sociopathic.
Yes.
They're absolutely sociopathic. Their desire for wealth, money, is they measure everything by money. We can take this down to a semi-personal basis. I'll cut and paste this a little bit, kind of speed it through. I drive a truck. I work for a company. company says they're going to pay me X number of dollars for a particular trip I take. I go pick the stuff up, I drive the trip. Now, because I'm driving a company truck, they'll tell me where to fuel. Okay.
Well, it's their truck. It's their truck. They get to do that.
No problem. I have no problem. Here's where the problem steps in. When they tell me where to fuel, and I go, oh, wait a minute, and I do some little mileage checking, I'm going, well, wait a minute now. You're paying me X number of dollars for X number of miles, but to go to this fuel spot over here is going to tack on another 50, 75 miles to my trip. Am I paying, being paid for it? No. Now, anybody, any real person, any real human being that would do that would look at you and go, well, you know, Don, yeah, you're right. I am kind of thinking you a little bit. Here, let me make adjustments. But to a corporation, they're going to refer back to a little tiny line on a 60-page employment thing that I did.
Well, or they're going to look at a little itsy bitsy teeny weeny little line item that the boys in accounting have said, well, you know, if we do it this way, you know, we'll only save one millionth of one penny on any given fill up, but you know that turns into real money real quick.
It does, and I made the point. I said, well, the mathematics of this says your savings that you're making from making this fuel stop is only possible because I'm essentially donating free labor to you. And, of course, yeah, it goes through one ear and out the other. Now, I get away with some things myself out here, so I think it kind of balances out. But you get the underlying point. People, normal people wouldn't do things like that. But these people, when you're thinking corporations, when you're thinking about the Detroit, when you're thinking about the Koch brothers, they operate on the idea it's, you know, to borrow the term, that's one of the reasons why the Lord of the Rings and the whole My Precious and the Ring and all that stuff was so poignant, because it almost exactly personifies the world we live in right now. You have one group of people, and we'll be polite and call them Republicans and teabaggers and birchers and all the other words that we define them at.
Yes.
But they see the world through their eyes, and they want it through their way. And everybody else is just little orbits out there.
Arguably, absolutely true.
And although it's not universal, but the people that lean towards the D, they actually think more of community, of the society, of maybe we would like to leave something down the road a little bit.
Well, now, understand, right-wingers and Republicans, they think of community, too. It's just that they define community in a much narrower sense. They tend to think more of the it's all us versus them, and if them are going to get anything, well then us are getting effed. Because the right wing tends to see things as zero sum gain situations. If you've got something, that means I have less.
Yep. Maybe revealing a little bit more about my details of my life than probably be good at, but I used to, in a little town outside Las Vegas called Henderson, Nevada.
I've heard of the place. I lived there
for a time. And the underlying history of that town, of course, is that between it and Boulder City, it was started as the place where the workers who worked on Hoover Dam. You know, that's where the housing was, where the place started up at. Now, in downtown Henderson, now this is 15, 17 years ago, there was a strip of housing still in the quote-unquote downtown area because the town had simply grown up around it. And Lula Bay, I really love that woman. She was, at the time, she was 79 years old. She had been living in a little shotgun house is what they are, and there was a whole, like, about 40 of them. That had been development that had been built directly or indirectly connected to the Hoover Dam project. Her husband had worked on the dam. This was her house. She'd lived here most of her adult, you know, for decades. The city of Henderson got a hair up their backside and went and got this thing together they called a redevelopment corporation, combination of government and private, private thing. The government would bring in the eminent domain laws, the private would bring the money, and they went through a whole dog and pony show process, and I was part of a group of people that took the city to court, trying to fight back against this, saying, you get, no, these people, their houses are paid for the most part, you know, when it's time for the, when they die and somebody else wants to move in, it's a nice and expensive house that working people can live in. Well, they didn't want that. They wanted to gentrify it. They wanted to get rid of the housing. They wanted to put another casino up or another, or a shopping center complex. And, I mean, we fought for 2 years over this. We eventually lost because, you know, once the money people get their head up, then, you know, you pay hell to fight them. But we fought hard. And it never ceased to amaze me. I talked to one of the vice mayor of the city at the time, and he and I talked about this, and he was like, and he says, I totally agree with you, John. You know, in an ideal world, they could find another place to build. But he said, this isn't an ideal world. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars here, and this handful of people are standing in the way of that. They have to go. And that sent a chill down my spine, and I'm like, thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor, have a nice day, blah, blah. And I left, and I almost left crying because it was the right in your face being told that evil is standing right in front of you, and he wears a nice suit, he smiles at you, and he'll shake your hand, but you can smell the brimstone coming off the guy. And they do not care.
Nope. You're right. And you're absolutely right.
Just, you know. So anyway, it was a very pleasant conversation. Give my regards to people. And like I said, I'll pull the numbers up on the podcast tomorrow and drop your little money order towards you. So you should, I imagine, receive it Monday or Tuesday.
Bless your heart. And just remember the horn, not Bob Kincaid. Okay.
What? I expect you to make money? Come on, dude. You wouldn't be such an honest and forthright fighter for the poor if you actually made a living doing this.
Stop it.
Have a good day.
Just stop it. Drive carefully, John. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy John on the road, God knows where. I always enjoy our conversations. Lines are open. 304-663-46. That's the Gizmo line. 304-574-8178. That's what we call the Skype line. It's a phone number through Skype. You don't have to use Skype to call it, okay? Or Skype to Skype, simply Bob Kincaid Horn. And that's how that works. Well, hey, look. It's the angry Indian himself. Hey, angry.
Hey, how you doing, my man?
How are you, brother?
Yeah, I'm cool. You know, I mean, I'm excuse me. Listening to the conversation, and you know, a lot of this, again, I hate to be the downer, but you know, a lot of this is cool, and it's just, you know, we've been talking about this since the late 50s. Some will go back and talk about Mother Jones, you know, in terms of the same type of discussion we're having right now. You know, whether
but angry, isn't that because it's the eternal dynamic? The eternal struggle of the working class for dignity and, for lack of a better word, respect?
Well, that's what Marx would say, but then at the same time, you know, a lot of Marxists ignore the fact that he admitted, you know, pretty late in his life that he realized, you know, that people like Lenin would take his ideas and stop at dictatorship, you know, and that's it.
Right, right. No, the dictatorship of the proletariat, no. No, we're just going to, no, I understand. And, you know, but by the same token, and I think it's worth pointing out again that at least, and this is not a defense of Leninism, which became Stalinism, which became a nightmare and just a bloodbath and a killing ground, but at least there was some marginal, maybe, attempt at Marxist principles, although certainly not in any pure form. Whereas with something like libertarianism, angry, it's never been tried because it's impossible.
Well, yeah, no, but it depends on how you define, you know, liberalism / libertarianism, right? I mean, if you ask Rand or Ron Paul one thing, you'll get a particular answer. But if you ask Professor Noam Chomsky from MIT something on the same lines, using the exact same language, objectively, you'll get a completely different answer. And one of the things that Professor Chomsky has pointed out over the years is that propagandists, one of your listeners mentioned sometime during the week Frank Luntz, you know, the number one Goebbels-like fellow who's working for the GOP, that completely fucks up language, you know, in terms of English anyway, in terms of the way Americans use English, which is really poor English, you know, any fucking way. But, you know, when we say, you know, liberal now, so on, libertarian, the original meanings of these terms, anarchist, socialist, communist, they're all gone. Because everything's been fucked up by the way that, you know, the media, which, you know, a lot of it has been the you know, journalists on their own doing these things because they really believe in the system. And a lot of it because, well, as we saw during the church committee hearings, with, you know, he was kind of grandfatherly, Bill Colby. He was the head of the CIA for a time. He was OSS during World War II. I mean, you know, he was a commando. You know, he actually went out there and did sabotage against the Germans, against the Italian fascists. He really understood the dirty side of intelligence work. And when the church committees, or when the church committee hearings came up from Senator Frank Church from Idaho, he admitted that the, you know, on top of a whole bunch of assassination plots, that, yeah, you know, we pretty much control the press. We tell the media what to report in many cases. Every now and again, you get somebody who will sneak through, like in terms of Iran-Contra. And we saw what happened to that particular reporter.
Yeah, well.
You know.
And we saw what happened to the perpetrators, too. Thank you, Poppy.
Well, some of them.
The ones that were close and personal got pardons. The ones.
Well, yeah.
No. The ones who could drop the dime on Poppy got pardons.
Well, got pardoned or had accidents. You know, there's a particular pilot who was running around, evidently, with the Civil Air Patrol. He knew David Ferry, who was connected to the... this isn't a conspiracy theory, who was connected to...
No. These are verifiable.
Yeah.
I know where you're going. And I'm thinking also, who was the CIA director who miraculously decided to go out boating like Fredo?
Oh, that's who I'm talking about.
Colby? Was it? No.
Yeah.
No.
Colby had an accident while he was...
No, it wasn't Colby, I don't think.
Well, Angleton used to fish too, but everybody knew that. You're telling me something in that.
Casey, William Casey.
Oh, William Casey.
Yeah.
Well, William Casey was sick, so you know there was he had health issues. So nobody really knows what the hell what's going on with that. And in that murky environment, nobody ever really does goddamn know. You know, but one of the things that needs to be pointed out is, or at least I feel should be discussed anyway, is the, you know, for lack of a better term, the general social opinion on a lot of subjects. You know, be it Whitney Houston's daughter being found in a bathtub like her mother, right, because they just took her off life support. And that's going to start a whole range of conspiracy theories.
Yeah, but let's remember, the reason people's... to the extent that they still remember it, the reason people's pink little ears perk up at the mention of William Casey is that he was slated to testify in the Iran-Contra case.
Uh-huh.
And had his little stroke hours before.
Well, what happened to William Sullivan, William C. Sullivan? He was supposed to testify about the JFK assassination a few days before what happened to him. And then you had the Monshaw, right, who was connected to Oswald, who I'm starting to believe. I'm really, you know, over the decades, not that I'm a fanatic about this, but, over the years, you know, you really look at the Kennedy case and you start to find out that he had, you know, FBI connections. He had, you know, agency connections. You start to, you know, wonder who the hell was he working for? you know, I mean, he started working for intelligence in terms of his Marine service at the tender age of 18. You know, goes to Russia at what, 20, 21? After working at a base in Japan that was a nest of goddamn spies? And I'm not even, like you said, we're not even going into conspiracy theory. These are things that are verified in the public record.
Yeah, no. Well, like with Casey, I mean, he was supposed to testify before Congress on the Iran-Contra scandal, had all the information necessary to completely drop the dime on dear, patriotic, greasy-headed old Ronnie, and hours before he's supposed to testify, lo and behold, he has some sort of an event that causes him to be unable to speak.
Well, hey, it's kind of like Futaquitic. Remember that one? That's what I called it. You know, as far as I know, I'm the first person that called it Futaquitic when Cheney was out supposedly hunting. Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, did he have a beer? Did he have one beer? Was it two beers? You know, how many Secret Service people, you know, remember him having a beer? And how long was it before he actually did this? And the fact that this guy cried and apologized to him, and then the person who really owned the property was the person who actually went to the authorities about it and didn't make a press conference. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of this, you know, it's kind of like what I say about the Jewish conspiracies. You know, they're all bullshit. They're all nonsense. You know, and Alex Jones is known for pushing, not all of them, but some of them, in a very cloak and dagger way. But then you got Rents, you know, Jeff Rents, who says that Alex Jones is a Zionist agent, you know. Yeah.
That's like the old joke about the fight between the hard-shell Baptist and the soft-shell Baptist.
Hey, I did a particular show.
Die, heretic!
Hey, I did a particular show with the cat that wrote, well, not with him. He had already been, and he died in murky circumstances. And I apologize to he and his relatives for not being able to remember his name, because we used his audio. And I remember him. He was a libertarian. He was somebody that was on the Patriot end. And he was actually giving speeches and talking about Area 51, which turned out to be true. He claimed to have worked – help me here, Bob. He claimed that worked for Naval Intelligence at one point. He wrote a book called Behold a Pale Horse.
Oh, Jesus.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
And I can't remember his name right now. Somebody out there remembers. But in any case, at some point, he started saying, hey, you know what? A lot of this is false nonsense. You know, they're flooding the public with this bullshit. There are no goddamn UFOs other than what the military is working on. And, you know, there's a lot of white supremacists that are sneaking out under the radar because of this bullshit. And he named Alex Jones specifically. And the reason I'm mentioning him is...
You're talking about Milton William Cooper.
Well, William Cooper, yeah.
Yeah.
Milton was his first name? See, yeah. I didn't remember that. But Bill Cooper, yeah, that's it. Thank you very much. Bill Cooper. He started to, you know, come around and say, hey, you know, they've been fucking with us because there are lots of people who believe that there's a conspiracy and we've seen a lot of funny things and, you know, we're looking at stuff and we know that there are secret societies, and there are. You know, and these things are real, but they're not sitting in dark rooms, you know, plotting to control the world the way that the mystics or the people.
No. It's much more. No, that's the position that I've always taken, Angry. It is much more prosaic than that.
Yeah.
It is. If you can get enough people to accept as gospel truth any given conspiracy theory, whatever the truth is that you want to keep hidden is more easily kept that way.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to go there. Suffice to say that I've taken the position that, oh, I have to go there.
Let's go.
It is far, no, because every time I go here, people get mad at me and I get messages and Jesus Christ. Rather than buying into the notion
that George Bush put on a little black hat and little black boots and a little black coat and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center so that it would pancake, which a lot of people have been convinced to buy into. What if the real conspiracy was simply the knowledge that it was going to happen and making sure that we just got out of the way so it would? I mean, the documentary evidence is out there. You know, the Project for a New American Century. We need a new Pearl Harbor. And something that I cite too, because I just happened to run across it in a book that had nothing to do with 9/11. The commencement address given by Paul Wolfowitz at West Point in June of 2011. In which he says to these graduating senior cadets who are very quickly going to become commissioned junior officers in the United States Army, I can't tell you what's coming, but I'll just tell you something's coming, and you need to be ready for it, whatever it is.
Yeah, but he said it in such a way that it was so vague that, you know.
Well, it wasn't vague enough that when I read the book, I didn't go, holy Jesus, and, you know, run for the highlighter. I wish I could find the book, because it's actually a book about the process of being a cadet at the United States Military Academy. It's not foreign policy. They are very intensely personal stories. But lo and behold, there it was, and I went, well, shit.
But see, that's how those things leak out. You know, like, I'm going to say this now because I'm actually embarrassed. I've said to you on this show about three times that I can remember that I've been working on peace, you know, as usual, about fascism. And, you know, I can never finish it because I keep seeing more and more symptoms. And I'm saying that because we're talking about a disease. I'm seeing more and more symptoms. And the thing about fascism, I suppose maybe the language is wrong. We really need to call it corporatism as it was intended to be called.
No, that's what Mussolini said.
That's what Mussolini said. And the banking conspiracy here involving the Bush family and the DuPonts.
Well, look, I mean, in the final analysis, Napoleon, even though the weaponry has changed, Napoleonic tactics, which were, of course, built upon Caesarian tactics, are still very much in play. And Napoleon's maxims are still very much useful. And divide and conquer works. So if you can get this little handful of people who could be trouble to you obsessed with that conspiracy, and another handful of people who, if they banded together with the other people that you've already sent wandering off into the weeds, if you can get them obsessed with a different conspiracy, blah, 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 conspiracy, and everybody get, okay, so these people, we're going to get these people worked up about the Bohemian Grove. This is the bunch that's going to be worked up about 9/11. We got chemtrails over here. Then they can go about the business of doing the real dirty work. Okay? See, I for instance, and I'll get mail about this because I just said chemtrails. I, for instance, know that there is shit in our air that is not part of any goddamn conspiracy, Angry, but is simply put there by virtue of the profit motive. Okay? I know. Because the place from whence comes my electricity is a 50-year-old coal-fired power plant on down the river from me. And it just and when you get right down to it, its stack height is about the same height as where I am. The top of its stacks are about the same height as where I am. And the wind blows right up the gorge. And so all of those poisons coming out of that stack blow on me and mine. And my neighborhood, my friends, my community. And you know what?
It didn't require the goddamn Bilderbergs or the Rothschilds or the Illuminati or the learned protocols of the learned elders of Zion to make that happen. All that was necessary was capitalism.
Well, yeah, and the thing about it is, right, you know, if you want to get some nasty mail, you know, we can get into Aleister Crowley, you know, because he used to mention, you know, before he completely lost his fucking mind that, you know, the devil doesn't exist. Because if the devil existed and had unity, he would be a god.
We don't need the devil.
We don't need the devil.
We are the devil. You know,
I just want to interrupt you because no. I don't want to lose my train of thought. You know, everything that you just pointed out, if you remove the United States from the equation in terms of, you know, focus on the U.S. and say Canada and Mexico in terms of North America and the U.K. or the entire Anglophone, you know, setup. You know, everything you just talked about is exactly what gave birth to the radicalism that, you know, gave rise to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. They gave rise to what became, you know, Al-Qaeda eventually, you know, or whoever the fuck. I mean, I'm still of the mind that Al-Qaeda didn't really exist until the press started talking about it. Because everybody, I mean, I'm looking at a book right now called Ghost Wars by Steve Cole, who was, you know, pretty much explaining things the way certain officers in the agency wished that they could explain things. They were working in Afghanistan. A lot of people know that bin Laden is a Saudi. And they also know that his family cut him off. But we also know that Saudi Arabia has been sponsoring fucking extremism.
Oh, no. Look, now see, that's one of those places where I don't feel like I'm participating in any sort of... Because there's anytime you look into these larger so-called conspiracy theories, there's always somebody selling a book. Or they've got a video that you need to watch. And it only costs you $9.95. And so the minute I see the price tag, I go, nah. But you know what? There's... The 25 redacted pages, the 25 pages in regard to the Saudis and 9/11, look, that's what's being covered up. It's not that George Bush planted bombs in the World Trade Center. It is that our dear friends, our bosom buddies, the king that George W. Bush kissed right on the mouth eater and walked around holding hands amongst the bluebells with, funded 9/11.
Yeah, but not just that. See, the other funny thing is, Israel has something to do with this as well. And what I'm trying to say is, I'm talking about Orwell now. The war is not meant to be won. It's meant to be continuous. You know, I mean, the fact that we're looking at what's happening in Ukraine, which is being run by fucking neo-goddamn-Nazis. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a documented fucking fact. The people who are running the fucking police departments over there now, who have taken over, the folks who are running internal security, the folks who are running their goddamn intelligence wing, all of the fuckers who are running everything that has anything to do with economics, the education system over there in Ukraine, is from the far right. And, you know, Israel was part of that bullshit. They were former IDF goddamn cats, I suppose, were working as mercenaries. They were Jews. I don't understand how this works. But I do understand that many Ukrainians who are Jewish, who remember when Hillary Clinton was talking about that Russia wouldn't allow these Jews to be free, her and her husband, and Reagan and so on. They kept talking about Human Rights Day. You know, this went on for a long time until they finally allowed them to make a liar. And then it turned out, and you can look at Ehud Olmert when he was prime minister talked about this. That the majority of Russian and Ukrainian Jews that they have, you know, pretty much forcibly in many ways integrated have become the biggest neo-Nazi problem that we have in Israel. And that is how most of the world found out that Israel has a neo-Nazi problem. So some of these cats went back to Ukraine and helped the right sector, which was the main gendarme army, right, that was running around. Because if you remember, if you looked at the international news, these cats are running around in camouflage, boots, they had equipment, and they were beating the hell out of anybody that got in their way over in the Maidan. And the United States didn't say anything until they caught Ambassador Newland. Is she an ambassador? Whatever her post is. being caught speaking to somebody saying, yeah, we've already made a decision. Fuck the European
Union. Oh, look. I knew the fix was in when they sent Joe Biden's son over to Ukraine to tell them that their way to freedom and glory and Frisbee and wheat checks was to frack.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's always about oil. Remember when South Ossetia set itself off from Georgia?
Yeah, well, look. You know, the French literature, or maybe it's just an aphorism, have a phrase, cherchez la femme, you know, when find the woman. I reject that, but I adopt cherchez l'huile, find the oil. Once you find out that hydrocarbons are in play somewhere, you know that shit is going to get ugly fast.
Fast. But what I'm pointing out is, here you have Georgia, which is right on the periphery of the Russian Federation.
Right.
And you can say whatever the hell you want about Putin because he's tearing up Chechnya, you know, the same way the U.S. is doing, you know, wherever the hell they want to go. Africa, Arab world, wherever the fuck, right? South America. Nobody talks about South America. But the point is, they didn't jump. You know, the same way Israel keeps hitting Lebanon specifically to antagonize Hezbollah. You know, who are
to antagonize them sort of as a way of proxy antagonizing Iran.
Iran.
Now, I mean, you know, next month, you're gonna see the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives and the Senate, their fangs will be dripping blood for Iran.
Yeah, but they can go ahead and do as much and talk about, you know, we are coming to get you in the Straits of Hormuz. They can do all of that all they want. But they're creating what you were leading to, I believe. They've created a goddamn condition that is like Sharknado. You just have a bunch of vicious goddamn creatures who are in a whirlpool trying to fucking eat at each other.
You know, I have heard many, many, many attempts to explain the conflict in the Middle East, the relationship between Israel and the enemy states. I've never heard it referred to as Sharknado, but you know what? I think that may be the best thing yet.
Well, I call it Nazi NATO, to tell you the truth, because these are all fascists. And I'm not insulting anybody in the Arab world by saying this, but Hamas, which was a creation of Mossad, I'm saying that because that's the truth. Anybody can do the goddamn research on that.
Well, just in more prosaic terms, by essentially dismantling and destroying PLO, they made the PLO, Hamas, nature abhors a vacuum. And so if you get rid of one thing, you'll get the next thing that comes after, it's going to be even worse.
Yeah, but the point was is that they've admitted to this, that they created Hamas as a right-wing counterbalance to the mostly left-wing. Not entirely. It's just that the PLO was an umbrella, but you know, and they didn't agree with each other all the time. But the point was is that they were open, and they involved Christians and atheists and what have you. And you know, if Israel was to lose or had to actually go to a negotiating table and deal with somebody, the fuck if they wanted to deal with the left wing.
But in all of this, you know, we talk about Iran, we talk about Lebanon, we talk about Israel. How is it that we keep managing to not talk about the Saudis? Because they're pulling more strings than anybody cares to admit. By the way, just a little closer to home, I couldn't help noticing here that lo and behold, the Saudi king drops dead, and we get the new king. Who is not particular? I mean, everybody knows he's just not screwed down real well. So he's got a caretaker sort of regent also appointed, and when Abdullah did that, it offended the hell out of a lot of people, because the regent is not the child of a true Saudi princess, but rather a concubine. Never mind, monarchies get complicated that way. But I couldn't help noticing that where my gasoline was on the way down to $2 a gallon, it's back up to 2.25 all of a sudden.
Well, this cat was at one point quoted as saying, at least in the business, the economic news, is saying that petroleum would never go to $100 a barrel again, USD.
Mm.
That's what he said at the time. But then, like you just pointed out, this is somebody who may not necessarily be in control of his faculties. And, you know, we don't really know what's coming out of
him. Right. Yeah, I mean, you don't know if that dude's sitting in Riyadh saying, the Pharaoh desires grapes.
Yeah, we don't know.
Give me a grape.
But like I was saying, you know, I was vomiting most of this week, you know, figuratively, because here it is, the Pentagon is calling for an essay contest to explain on how the late, you know, king of Saudi was a progressive.
You are lying to me. I will not. Oh, my God.
Look it up. This is how things are going. This is why I mentioned Orwell.
Well,
the law is meant to be continuous.
President Not Sure cut his India trip short to run over and talk about what a wonderful man King Abdullah was when it was an open secret, apparently, according to what I read, that King Abdullah despised Barack Obama.
Yeah, but Barack Obama is an African. The king was a Saudi.
Yeah, they do not think that, no, there's the Red Sea cuts through there, and yeah, by God, the Saudi Peninsula is a part of Asia, not Africa.
Hey, even the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, right, in all due respect,
yeah,
went and made a tour of the Arab world some time ago and came back and said, you know what, they talk about the way that we do Islam. Okay, I don't give a fuck about what they say because I saw racism everywhere I went in the goddamn Arab world. He said they treat African people like dirt.
And they treat people from the Indian subcontinent like dirt. And they treat Malaysians like dirt. And they treat Indonesians like dirt.
Look, racism has always been a part of Arab culture. They define between white and black Arabs. Now, if you don't deal with the Arab community, you don't know that. But you can go on, you know, YouTube. If you go and look at Arab media, you will find black Arabs who talk about the racism that they endure.
No, I've seen it before.
In Saudi and so on, Egypt.
Well, I mean, unless they were putting a whale of a Mary Kay job on Abdullah, he's pretty white.
Well, in that part of the world, yes. But see, but that's the whole thing. The majority of people in the Anglophone world, even if they're of color, we tend to look at things through white eyes. So we don't see. We just say, okay, well, he's not white, so they can't have that kind of racism. So if he's meeting President Obama, there's going to be mutual respect. That's not true. You know, there's a lot of black people who have been talking like that since they've had that meeting, talking about it was a meeting of equals. And I'm like, well, it was literally a meeting of equals, but do not believe that the king of Saudi Arabia took President Obama as his equal. Now, it's different when the Bush family goes over there.
Right. Oh, and by the way, the guy that we learned to refer to as Bandar Bush.
Bandar Bush.
Did you read?
What the fuck is going on right now?
Did you happen to read the news accounts of his testimony in the 9/11 civil lawsuit the other day?
No.
Or not Bandar Bush's testimony, but the 19th hijacker who is doing life in Supermax.
Oh yeah. But he isn't saying anything that the Guardian hasn't reported already.
No, but it was coming out of. Look, nobody's putting the Guardian under oath and having him say it in front of a jury. This was said in front of a United States federal jury, sworn, tried and true. And Mousawi was put on the stand, stuck his hand in the air, whatever, swore to tell the truth. The guy's already doing life in Supermax. I mean, okay, so sure, maybe you argue that he's just trying to make other people's lives miserable because his sucks. But what he did is he sat there and said, I worked with Sheikh bin Laden, and he told me to formulate a list of our big donors because he wanted to make sure and thank them special super-duper good. Well, Faisal al-Turki was a big donor to Al-Qaeda.
That's the intelligence man.
Bandar Bush was a big donor to Al-Qaeda.
That's the covert intelligence man, I suspect. Many suspect.
And of course, let's remember that one of the earliest investors in the failed oil prospecting career of George W. Bush was a guy named bin Laden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's another name.
But the larger question here, and I'm sorry, Angry, because we're kind of running out of time, but
The larger question here is, how many news stories in the for-profit media, like say over on Fox, and I say over on Fox not as a joke, but because Fox is, because the majority minority owner of Fox is a prince of the Saudi royal house. How many
That's
stories?
Where I was going.
How many stories were there on Fox about that?
None, because that is the other name. He has a controlling interest in Fox News. The number one.
He owns 48%, and Rupert owns 52%.
That's right. He has the controlling stock, but who owns the other fucking half?
Right. Rupert's got 52. Dude has 48.
And
Saudi dude has 48.
And the Republicans are pushing Jeb Bush for 2016 with this background and the fact that they were Nazi goddamn profiteers, and that is the root of the fucking Bush fortune. Not to mention the October surprise.
Yeah. And apparently the Bush mystique is sufficient. I mean, I think it had to take a lot to run Romney out. Because that man wanted to be president.
Badly. He could take
And as quick as he said, "I'm in," something happened.
Well, he would have sucked Jeb's dick if he thought that would have made him vice, but they told him to get the fuck out of here.
Romney doesn't want to be VP. Romney wants to be president. But
no, he would have settled for VP if they let him. They told him to get the fuck out of here. He became a goddamn embarrassment, and they wanted him gone.
But they also, he has enough money. They wanted the money out of the way. Dear old Babs Bush has said that there's been enough. I mean, Sandra pointed this out that night. She said we've had enough Bushes in the White House. Even though that got said, the fact of the matter is, somebody back there is scheming for a third Bush in the White House.
Come on, voting while black in 2000 and 2004, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Expect it to happen in 2016. You know, and I'm out of here, but Joe, hey, if you have a credit card, if you have a debit card, please send this man some dosh, you know, whether he meets his goal tonight or not. Keep the horn on the air, please, if you can.
Thank you, Angry. Thank you, brother. You take care.
Be cool, my brother.
Our buddy, the Angry Indian. And there, got to say on the way out the door, thank you, A, to everyone who chipped in to meet Jay Cruzan's Power Mad Challenge for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And thank you, in addition to Jug of Punch, that meant we had $65 to go to finish the evening. Now we have only $55 to go to finish the evening. Thank you very, very, very kindly, one and all. It is, in fact, time to get out of here. Thanks to everyone, all of you, who share your precious finite time in helping to create this program every evening, whether you sit and listen and scream, or whether you sit and listen quietly, or whether you sit and participate in the chat room, send emails, Facebook, Twitter, Skype, however you participate, thank you for being an integral part of this community. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia for all of his technical expertise, much of which will be needed eminently as soon as I get done some of my own learning curve. Thank you, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to all of you who responded to and continue to respond to the Apple funding challenge. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.